Chapter 14. Thaddeus arrived at the office just after 7:30 the day after Christmas. He had stopped by the Silver Dome and listened to the gossip. Oddly enough, no one seemed to have heard about Ermeline's arrest yesterday. Instead, the tables were overflowing with talk of Victor Harrow's murder, which some were calling a suicide, which some were calling an act of terrorism, which some were calling the result of one too many dalliances with some married woman whose husband found out. Only Cece knew the truth. She had personally delivered an early morning breakfast of scrambled eggs and sausage to the Hickman County Jail, a courtesy to Sheriff Altman. Cece had seen the truth with her own eyes. Ermeline was housed in the one of the two women's cells. When the two friends saw each other, they both cried out. Cece had been briefed before going in that Ermeline was being held on a very serious matter, but other than that, nothing more was said. Now, when she saw Ermeline, she whispered,
"Why are you here?"
To which Ermeline replied,
"Victor Harrow was murdered. They say I did it."
Cece returned to the Silver Dome, determined not to breathe a word of what she had found out. Let the gossips and their fools find out for themselves. She and Ermeline worked together at the Silver Dome, and Cece had nothing but profound respect for that girl. She had been through it all, and had come out on the other side all the stronger for it. Her till always balanced when her shift was over, and she never gave away Bruce's alcohol to free drinkers. She made every dime for him she could, and the only time she lazed was when she was on break, often coming next door to Cece's side and having a bite to eat before returning to the din and clamor of the tavern side. They had always traded hellos, and the war stories typical among those who serve the American public their food and drink. No, she was protecting Ermeline from the masses that would try to devour her any way she could. Thaddeus found two bombshells waiting for him at the office. When he arrived, he made his coffee, took a seat at his desk, and dialed up his voicemail. Three messages waited. Bombshell number one was a call from a woman who identified herself as Rolanda Barr, an assistant attorney general at the AG's office in Springfield. Thaddeus played her message and then replayed it. The second time he made notes.
"Mr. Murphy," the message said, "my name is Rolanda Barr, and I'm an assistant AG with Robert K. Amastagio's office in Springfield. I've been asked by the sheriff of Hickman County to review the circumstances surrounding the shooting death of one Victor Moreland Harrow of Orbit, and I have made some preliminary inquiries. As you are probably aware, Mr. Harrow died as the result of a gunshot wound to the head, or so it appears at least, pending the coroner's final report, of course. It also appears that your client, Ermeline Ransom, was savagely attacked by Victor Harrow some time within the last little while. That being the case, we believe she had sufficient motive to retaliate against Victor Harrow. Along with that, Sheriff Altman and police officers from the City of Orbit PD executed a search warrant yesterday morning at your client's residence. A .38 caliber pistol was seized, as well as a 10-inch switchblade knife. The knife exhibited what appears to be bloodstains. The shooting wound to the forehead of Victor Harrow appears to be a .38 caliber wound, according to the State Police Crime Lab incident report, which I've been provided."
At this point, Thaddeus paused the message and took a long drink of coffee. His mind was spinning. These people had wasted no time at all, in coming after Ermeline. How much worse was this going to get before the end of today, he wondered. He punched play, and the message continued from Miss Barr.
"As a result of these preliminary, and I emphasize preliminary, reports, I have prepared and today will be filing a criminal complaint against Ermeline Ransom, charging first-degree murder in the shooting death of Victor Harrow. Initial appearance will be this morning, according to rule, and I can only assume that you will be representing your client at the appearance. I will be available to discuss the case with you after the initial appearance, but only briefly, as we are moving a temporary office into the law library of the Hickman County Courthouse to serve as our official presence in your county as this prosecution proceeds. Oh, yes, one last thing. I will oppose all bail motions. Here the evidence is strong and compelling against your client, and I believe Judge Prelate would be hard-pressed to find legal ground on which he could impose a condition of release that would allow your client her freedom, while the prosecution goes onward. So bring a checkbook that's got a whole bunch of zeros in it. She's going to need them."
The last was clearly intended as a joke, but Thaddeus was in no joking mood. He would send Christine across the street for a copy of the criminal complaint as soon as she arrived. Then he would take the complaint across Madison Street to the jail and meet with Ermeline. In the meantime, he would need to make arrangements with her mother for some clothes suitable for a courtroom dress. He didn't want her looking like some frazzled truck stop babe in an orange jumpsuit. She would be dolled up, but demure, and would look every bit the mother of a healthy 5-year-old who needed her at home. Thaddeus then skipped to the second message on voicemail. Bombshell number 2 was a call from District Attorney Quentin Irwin Jr. himself. In small counties such as Hickman, it is customary for the district attorney in Illinois to represent not only the state in criminal matters, but also to represent various departments in their administrative matters in the county. One of his common clients was the Department of Children and Family Services, DCF, which held 100% final say-so on any juvenile dependency matter in Hickman County. Thaddeus hit play.
Thad, Quentin, this isn't the best news you're going to get today. It appears that now that Ermeline has been arrested, the DCF folks are going to be filing a dependency petition for her little boy. I believe his name is Jamie Ransom. Naomi Killen is representing DCF in the matter. As you know, child dependency cases have priority in Illinois courts. This morning at 10 a.m. sharp, I will be appearing before Judge Prelate and attempting to have Jamie made a ward of the state. I know that Ermeline felt right about leaving the boy with his mother yesterday, but it turns out the mother has a criminal record, as we all know. Because of that, she's not a person qualified to have custody of this 5-year-old while the mother is out of the home. I know this sounds like bullcrap to you, and it probably is, but I wanted to give you a heads up. Please, spend some time on the horn this morning talking to Ermeline's family and try to find another candidate to take custody. I hate this as much as anyone, but it's my job, and sometimes my job sucks. Tell Ermeline I'm sorry, and that I promise a placement will be made that's suitable for Jamie while she's going through her own criminal case. I guess you know by now that I did follow up Charlie's call to the AG and claimed a conflict of interest there, so I don't have to prosecute Ermeline myself. It's bad enough I have to take her kid away from her. Later.
Thaddeus hung up on voicemail. There was a third call waiting, but right now he just couldn't take any more. He stood up and took a deep breath. He could feel his pulse racing, feel his heart beating a fast rhythm in his chest. This was all just happening too fast. He was going to have to talk to Ermeline about Jamie without waiting for Christine. Jamie would be the most important thing on her mind, and he didn't want to let her down. He wanted her to know he had come to her aid as soon as he heard. The F-150 with Louisiana plates pulled into the rest stop just south of Normal, Illinois. Hector rolled into a parking slot outside the men's restrooms. He shut it down, removed the key, and climbed out. Then he had a second notion and reached back inside the truck, to the driver's side, beneath his crumpled parka. He removed a pink wallet, about as long as a checkbook, snapped along the side. It was well-worn and smelled of a perfume Hector knew from his years with Ermeline. He undid the snap. There was her Illinois driver's license, color picture, Social Security card, several folds of Jamie's pictures at different ages, and a First National Bank check cashing card and 2 credit cards. He removed the 2 credit cards, an Amex and a MasterCard. Both cards were slipped into his shirt pocket. Why not? He thought. Might be good for laughs. One last jab at the old lady, run up a few grand on her cards, and then watch her squirm. He remembered Johnny Bladani's admonition to him to take nothing else from her purse but the cash. But he could only shrug. Son of a bitch thought he ran Hector's life, too? Guess not. Damn greaseball. On the way back to the men's room, Hector passed an orange garbage can hanging from a pole. He tossed the wallet into the trash and walked on. He really needed to take a leak. Man, he needed to piss. Chicago was another 3 hours, he calculated. But it was going to be fun. He had almost 7 grand in cash, 2 stolen credit cards, and that old deep-down ache for some lady fun. He would find the nearest pussycat club, get a lap dance, drink a pitcher, and get laid. Prospects were looking good. Very good indeed.